It's the highest real five. So when you talk about hygiene, do you mean because of women having the menstrual period?
That didn't help them, no. Because, I mean, their camps were also very, very badly kept. And, they were dying like flies. Those which, I mean, most of them were taking the gas chambers right away. But those which did, those that had been chosen for work, the survival rate was very, very remote.
So maybe the camp commandants chose more boys as being able to work?
Yeah, without doubt. More men. Boys, no. Boys, I mean, boys they didn't keep, they used to send you straight to the gas chambers. But on other occasions, some got through, and I was one of them. Another occasion.
Which was the worst period for you?
I would say Otochno, Auschwitz, and Buchenwald. And the Lodz Ghetto was also a very, very bad period for me, very bad. On my own, no family, nobody to help me, starvation, hard work, no hope for living, no hope for anything. I was just I was on my own, a small boy, no chance of anything. The only hope we had is maybe one day we'll be liberated. Maybe one day I will find my family, my parents, maybe a brother, sister. Nobody survived. Everybody was killed. My whole family was wiped out. I only found one sister after the war. She got across, the one who was in Padanice. She was older than me. She got across the border into Russia. And she was sent to Siberia, and then to Tashkent. And after the war, I've searched and looked. All my family was wiped out. Cousins, uncles, aunties, everybody. Everybody was killed.
How were you received in Britain?
Very well. We were 300 children there, we were recuperated. We started to learn English, and we couldn't speak one word of English when we arrived in England. And slowly we started learning. They gave us some private lessons in Windermere, in this large camp. All the help we could get, the Central British Fund had a lot of, they came to help us out, and got closing from the Red Cross, all different things helped. I think the British government gave us some help as well at the beginning. And then, even then, life wasn't easy. You got no family, you got no parents, you got to start life all over again. Couldn't speak the language. No money. A hard struggle upwards all the time.
How did you find the attitude of British people?
Very good. They didn't understand. We didn't say very much to them. At that time, we didn't say anything very much about the camps. And people just took us as normal boys and normal young people. So as far as that concerned, it was now in the back of us. We never discussed very much about it. Only when we spoke among the boys, after Windermere, we distributed about 20 boys in different hospitals. Liverpool, Manchester, Glasgow, all different cities in England. And there we learned the language, and we learned trades. And the British people basically were very good to us.
Did you come across any anti-Semitism or anti-foreign feeling?
Anti-foreign feeling, yes. Not so much when I went to work with some people. More anti-foreign than anti-Jewish at that time.
What type of things would people say?
You know, I've worked with some people and, as an Orthodox tradition, and they used to make some things, you know, not very much, but they were insinuating something, you know, different things.
That you ought not to be here?
Not so much as that, no, but I've heard them say about older people than me, not me in particular, but older other people than me, who are much older than me, who were here many years. But as time went on, I integrated into the British system very well. I love the country. They've done a lot. I've got a lot to be thankful to Britain for giving me a chance. I've got a family. I've got three children. And I have three children in my life. And I've got a lot to be thankful for. It was hard work. It wasn't easy. Not knowing whatever happened to your family. Well, we realized it after the war, what happened. And many years after the war, I had terrible nightmares, seeing all these things, these atrocities and hanging and beatings and everything. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night in a sweat and frightened, and was very, very traumatic. But as years go by, it is less now than it used to be with nightmares. But you can never forget these things.
Did you ever revisit Poland?
Yes. In 1980, I went back to my town. I went back to Auschwitz. I wanted to see. I was going to go on two occasions, and two occasions I cancelled it from fear, from nervousness, whatever. What it would be like. And eventually, the third time, I took courage, my wife joined me, and we went. I went back to Sherat, and there was only one Jewish person, and he didn't come from that town. Approximately 25 people survived from Sherat out of 5,000 Jews. The dispersed in Israel, in America, etc., in England. I went back, and the school still stands there. There was a cycle repair shop in the school, and a lot of the old town where I came from the part, was being demolished, and they were rebuilding things. The synagogue stands empty. It was a warehouse, the Germans made it a warehouse, and it's still empty. And there was one Jew there, which he was born in Kers, and he married a Christian woman, and he had three children, and he was decorated a lot by the Russians. He was a very good soldier. He was a Polish soldier in the Polish units, and he was a very decorated soldier. And and I said to him, well, how are you getting on? He says, well, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. My wife went through hell and my children. That was after the war. He was the only Jew left in the town. And he was glad to talk to me, because he hadn't seen anybody. And about the Jewish, and invited me to his house. He was a taxi driver there, that time. But his wife told me that she then went through living hell, being abused. Yet the mother was a Catholic, a Christian, and so on. And yet it was, even after all the war, while I stood near the house, which was demolished already at that time, our house, I stood there and I recognized two Poles who knew me and knew my parents inside. They were very nice to me, and they took me, showed me around the synagogue again, and showed the places where I was. They couldn't believe that I survived. I went actually to our house at the end. I couldn't pick up courage to see the street, and knowing that it was how vibrant it was, the Jewish life, the Jewish shops, the Jewish everything, and nothing, so the dead street, and to the Hebrew school where I went to, everything was empty, there was no life to it. And the pump in the town where I used to go for the water, because they only brought water into our town about 1939, but previously to that, there was a pump that used to go down and pump the water into the bucket and take it out. And this still stands as a monument of the town. But I spoke to one or two of the Poles and told them who I was, and some remember my parents. But there was no specific feeling for it. I was glad in the end to leave the town, because I had too many bad memories. Some good, and a lot of bad. And I went to visit Auschwitz, and very traumatic for me. Went to these places where I've been, and the barracks where I was, on the box where I slept. I'm glad I went back, because I had a ghost to bury. And I survived. I'm now at the age, retiring age, and I try and help the fellow human being as much as I can. I can't see injustices, and if I see films from Africa, children starving and so on, the things I would think, he thinks back to me, and I feel very nervous. But a lot of the time I look away, I just can't watch these things. But watching the film Schindler's List, brought a lot of memories back to me. Seeing a lot of myself in this film as a small boy, escaping, hiding in the toilets, hiding on the barracks, not to be selected to the gas chambers, and so on. As a human being, I blame a lot mankind for all the things that happened, because it could have been averted, all these things, if people would have done something about it from the beginning. Today we see it on television, and you've got the United Nations, you've got other different people that can stop these things, like in Bosnia, and when you see it happening, something can be done about it. But as far as the Germans and the Nazis, what they did, nobody did anything. Nobody said a word about it. Even Pope Pius XII, if he could have said something during the war, and Hitler would have realized that something that some people do know about it, But nobody said nothing, obviously, because it was Jews, so it didn't matter so much. I think humanity has got a lot to learn, and I hope that if anything does happen today, it doesn't matter to whom or to what nation or to what race, something should be done quickly to prevent any Holocaust to happen, as it happened to the Jews, that they killed 6 million Jews, and I'm one of the lucky ones to survive. But all my family perished for no other reason but only because they were Jewish.
Can you say something about the special character of Theresienstadt camp?
Yes, Theresienstadt camp was a fortress town. There were military barracks there before the war. It was a very difficult place to escape from because it was surrounded by very deep trenches all the way around the town. And that Theresienstadt basically was a show camp when the Germans wanted to show how well they treated Jews. They brought them to Theresienstadt. In Theresienstadt there's a lot of intellectual Jews from Czechoslovakia, Germany, all different places. And they kept them there. They allowed them to have an orchestra and a theater and all wonderful things to show the Red Cross. If the Red Cross ever complained about the treatment of the Jews, which they never did, they took him to Theresienstadt. They told the committee in Theresienstadt, the Jewish committee, to get everything nicely done, put photographs on and so on everywhere, and they gave them to eat on that particular days. And after the Germans, after the Red Cross left, it went back to the same old story, and they transported the transports to Auschwitz from Theresienstadt every so often. And the only one thing which I thought was a terrible shame, that Britain, after the war, brought in 8,000 SS men, Latvians, Estonians, Ukrainians, more these Eastern European countries, Hungarians, which were the biggest murderers, the biggest savages going, and they brought them to this country. They were going to go back to their countries because they would have been shot, which they deserve. And Britain brought these people in who were miners after the war, they lived as our neighbors, and balanced all these different villages. And they survived as ordinary human beings, lived a normal life, which was, in my point of view, which I always thought it was a terrible, terrible shame, that Britain, as a democracy, allowed this thing to happen. And that's the only thing. When I watched the documentary several months ago, I seen that and I thought to myself, where is justice? There's no justice then. These people who perpetrated terrible atrocities should be allowed to come into a civilized country and live a normal life, bring up normal families, and just carry on life as it is. It's just now they're just bringing the first person, a man of 84, into court. It's too late. I mean, these people should have been put away a long time ago. And then this I will finish.